1219 here on The Shilling Show, weekdays from noon to 2. This is the place to be. News Radio 1070 and 98.9 FM WINA. And pleased to welcome back to the program David Murata, the president of Murata Wealth Management. Today, financial Christmas gift ideas. David's online at muratahonmoney.com. And David, welcome back to The Shilling Show and Merry Christmas.
Yeah, Merry Christmas. Thank you so much for having me.
All right. So I guess the first part is I can remember this feeling years ago. I don't have it so much anymore. But when I was a younger person, the difficulty of creative gift giving, it's like, what am I going to give to somebody? You know, what does this person want? And I would really, especially if it was like Joan when I first met her, you know, it's like, what am I going to, I would just anguish over what's the right thing to do. And a lot of people anguish over this, don't they?
Yeah, it's amazing how important Christmas gift giving is, and how much pressure is on ourselves, really, because we all have a longing to be known and understood and loved by our community and the people around us. And so the perfect gift is one that the other person didn't know they wanted, but it was perfect because you knew what they wanted better than they did. And that's a tremendous pressure that I think everybody feels. And on the other end of the spectrum, some of us are just hoping to get something that they're not going to return immediately, and that they'll actually like. So it's difficult. And I think if you end up giving three perfect gifts in your lifetime, mm-hmm. you're doing above average. So we tend to put a lot of pressure on that. But gift giving really is almost a spiritual affair. It's not just a monetary and you know, here's a gift card. You're really just trying to say, you know, who is the other person, or who do I want them to be, or who do I see them as?
Mm-hmm.
And you're trying to communicate that. So gift giving is really just an expression of our love for one another. And with that, you know, gift giving is difficult because it has all of that pressure on it. And I think, you know, when you're receiving a gift, you have to realize that the other person is trying to give you something because they love you. And that's an expression in and of itself. Even if they fail miserably and they get your size wrong and they don't pick out something that you would have liked and everything else like that, that it's really an expression of their love for you. So when you receive a gift, that's the spirit you should have. When you're giving a gift, though, you're really trying to find that gift that says, here is what you mean to me and here is the way I view you.
Mm-hmm.
And those are just very powerful sentiments. And that's why I think the gift giving is so difficult.
It's hard, and you hear these commercials every year, you know, for the man or for the woman who has everything, you know, and I kind of feel like in some ways the man who has everything. I mean, if somebody came up to me and said, hey, I want to give you a new car, oh, I'd be very happy. I mean, that would be wonderful. But I mean, really, I have everything I need. I don't need anything, and there's not even something that I really want all that bad.
Yeah, I love the ad on the radio or on the TV right now. It's like a two diamond ring for your best friend and for your love, you know. And so you need to get her two diamonds. You know, I think most of us with our spouses, we'd have to buy them a tiara for all the different roles they play in our life. And I'm not sure a diamond tiara is actually what our spouses want us to be spending the money on. So it's you know, they're always trying to pull, and all the best ads are trying to pull at this. I think. Honorable aspect of gift giving to really say what you mean to me and who you are in my life.
I wanted to bring up something that you referenced here and I referenced in the very beginning of the program, which is giving cash, or I guess the new cash is gift cards. So when I was a kid and somebody would hand me an envelope and had cash in, I always felt kind of weird. I don't know why it is. I mean, it was certainly appreciated, but I almost felt guilty that someone was giving me cash. On the other hand, I could really spend it on whatever I wanted to, which was great.
Yeah.
Gift cards, I feel for some reason a little bit better about receiving a gift card. And I don't know why that is. I know I'll spend it like if it was at a restaurant or something. I know I'll go to the restaurant and enjoy it. It'd be really fun to pay with a gift card instead of my credit card. But those are kind of interesting things that there was a taboo, especially, I think, for a while about giving cash. It's like, nah, you don't really want to do that.
Yeah, if you put $100 in an envelope and somebody opens it and they have $100, it's like, okay, well, if we all exchanged cash, then some of us would make out better than others, but there'd be nothing that actually got bought in the economy. And what does that look like?
Yeah.
On the other hand, if you get someone a $100 gift card, you at least are picking the store that you know they love. So
mm-hmm.
it's either Lowe's or it's iTunes or it's Amazon or it's Bed Bath & Beyond or something like that, where you just know that they love this store. And so it is at least saying, I know you and I understand where you spend your money and the kinds of things, but I don't know what you have from that store,
mm-hmm.
or I don't know what you want from that store, but I just know that's your store. that's the store you go to. And so it does express a little bit of the, I at least know you and understand you a little bit better. And I think that's why a gift card doesn't seem like it's as bad. I know that you will enjoy this great dinner at this wonderful restaurant that's one of your favorites. And mm-hmm. so it communicates that kind of love and understanding.
We're talking with David Murata, and the topic today is financial Christmas gift ideas. 977-1070 is the phone number. We'd love to hear from you if you have comments or questions. How do you feel when somebody gives you cash, or is the gift certificate or gift card better? There was a concept that you referenced in one of your pieces, David, called deadweight loss. Now, I'd never heard the term, but it's a really fascinating concept. Tell us about it.
Yeah, it's the idea that when someone buys something for you, you don't value it as much as the person paid for it. So basically, if you give you something and you really didn't want it, maybe that you wouldn't have paid full price for it. Maybe you would have only paid half price for that. But they gave it to you and spent more money than you would have spent on yourself if you'd bought it. That concept of deadweight loss is basically the difficulty in understanding what someone else would value high enough to know what they would value and want to buy for and what they wouldn't. And one of the problems is most of the things that I would value enough to pay with my own money, mm-hmm. I buy myself.
Mm-hmm.
So they estimate that the deadweight loss at Christmas time of gifts that are not valued as much by the receiver as by the giver is about 20%. It's about $162 per person for, you know, an average $812 in gifts being received. And that's a big piece of the economy, if you will, when you think about it. Gift cards help try to remove that because you know that the gift card will be exactly what they would have paid money on, because at least then they have the money. And so gift cards are trying to remove some of that deadweight loss, even at the expense of actually giving someone a gift and picking it out for them.
Let's go to the phones and say hello to Greg. Greg, just a couple minutes here in this segment. You're on with David Murata.
This is Ebenezer Quinn. And you know, I gave my kids permission to never, ever, ever have to buy me anything for the rest of their life. And in turn, I don't want to have to go get them anything. It's very stressful, and they're grown men now. And my wife and I don't exchange presents. I really just, that's the part of, you know, when you're young, it stresses young families out to have to run out, and they don't have the money, and they go in debt. I'd like to eliminate this part of Christmas, and I'll just sign off and hear what y'all say about that.
You know, it's a great point, and I've never quite thought about it like that. But yeah, stressing out not only, you know, what are we going to give, but the financial stress on families, because I saw that the dollar figure that people are spending, and if you extrapolate that to families, there's a lot of money, people going into debt.
It is a lot of money. And usually it's on things that are not necessities, and necessities are being shortchanged in the family equation because of it. We did something early on with our children, and that is we had them have their own budgets for their clothes and books mm-hmm. and things like that. And so when they wanted to buy something, they would actually go out and spend their own money with it, and they would work for that money. And so it was one way of getting taxes better, because their income was taxed at a lower rate. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of family businesses do this. When you employ your children in the family business, you're taking it from your tax rate, moving it to their tax rate. But you're also providing them with an opportunity to budget for themselves. One of the odd side effects of them spending their own money on their own clothes and books and things is at Christmas time, they actually wanted to get clothes because they didn't want to spend the tremendous amount of their own money that it cost to buy nice clothes, but they wanted to have nice clothes. And so that's an aspect. So when you turn around Christmas and you make it something that is a little bit more of necessities and a little bit less of frivolities, I think it adds value. In our family, what we like to give is we like to give what we call vocational gifts. Mm-hmm. And that is, it's something, especially for children, it's something that encourages them to pursue the vocations that they're interested in. And those kinds of gifts, I think, you know, a tablet if they're interested in graphic design, or movie equipment if they're interested in movie editing, are a little bit better than snow skis in my calculation.
977-1070 here on The Shilling Show, continuing this conversation with David Murata on financial Christmas gift ideas. When we get back on the other side, we're going to go to some of those specific gifts that David has recommended and things for you to consider. Also, questions or comments, 977-1070. Shilling Show returns in a moment.
I gave a girl a ride in the wagon. She crawled in and took a
The off-the-air conversations, those are the ones you really want to hear. We will continue here on The Shilling Show with David Morata. He's online at moradaonmoney.com. We're talking about financial Christmas gift ideas and the whole concept of gift giving. We welcome you here to the program. Comments, questions, we welcome you at 977-1070. There's a line open for you, and Dick has been waiting patiently. Hey, Dick, welcome to The Shilling Show, and you're on with David Morata.
Thank you, Rob, and thank you, David, for taking my call. One of the interesting, I'm an older gentleman in my 70s, and early on in my marriage, my in-laws were giving me sport coats, really nice ones for Christmas. And after about two times, I guess, I got these beautiful sport coats. They changed the size and made it too big for me. And the first year, I thought, should I tell them? No, they'd be upset that they'd made a mistake. So I thought, we'll just let it go. And it hung in the closet. It's a beautiful coat. And the next year, you know what I got? Another one, that same size. Mm-hmm. And I once again had the dilemma, should I tell them they've done it wrong for 2 years? I ended up with three beautiful sport coats that I couldn't wear. And my whole life I've wondered, should I tell them right away that it's the wrong size? And I did not do that. That's my question. I wondered if you could just, I'll hang up and you just tell me your opinion of what I should have done.
Yeah, this is a great question. And I have a personal experience along those lines as well. David, what do you think? I mean, if we talk about gift etiquette and what people ought to do, what do you do in a situation like that?
In our family, the first thing someone says when it's a piece of clothing is, and if it's the wrong size, please tell me, because it's very easy to return and we can get something better. Even if you don't like it, let me know. And in our family, we try to appreciate the thought of the gift and have tried to get over the, but it doesn't fit or I don't like it, so let's return it and get something that I do like. Especially for an older generation, that's considered impolite. And for a younger generation, that's considered okay. And I think the difference is it used to be very, very difficult to return things to the store and then get a different size. Mm-hmm. And I think with the online internet, Amazon.com and all of that, it's become much easier to return things. And I think so as a result, it's become much more socially acceptable to go through the burden of returning someone something. So I'm right there with you. If you get something that maybe you didn't want, do you say something about it or not? And in our family, we just try to encourage people to say something about it, because it's the thought that counts. Yes, and I appreciate the thought and all that's happened, but I also want you to have something that you can wear and that fits.
Yeah.
And so I'd rather you not have three beautiful sport coats hanging in the closet that are too large. There's a little bit of a sadness to that because they're not getting use. And so either pass those on to someone else if we can't return them but let me know so I don't buy the third one, the third year in a row that's the wrong size.
I was wondering, I was going to ask Dick, but I didn't get a chance to, if you ever grew into them. Some of us tend to continue growing even though we're not getting taller anymore. The situation we had one time along those lines was when Caroline was born, and one of Joan's relatives sent a blanket over that was embroidered with her name on it, but it said the date and then the weight of the baby, and the baby's weight was wrong on the blanket. It's like, you know what? I'm not going to say anything. This would be such a hassle for her because we couldn't take it back, obviously, but to send it back to her and say, hey, the weight's wrong, would you please? We just decided to live with it, and it will always be a joke whenever we take that blanket out and look at it and see it was wrong. It's actually kind of a funny thing. 977-1070 is the phone number. David Morata is our guest. We're talking about Christmas, and we may eventually get into financial Christmas gift ideas, but I think we do have another caller on the line, and Dick's back here. Just quickly, Dick, go right ahead.
Rob, I got cut off there, but my error. But what I did with those three coats is I looked at them for a couple of years, then we moved a couple of times. And I always looked at them. They ended up at Goodwill, so there was a good purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And they were brand new. Whoever got them at Goodwill, they got a really nice sport coat.
Yeah, and that always makes me feel better is when I take something to Goodwill and know that someone else is probably going to be able to enjoy it as well.
I like the same thing. Dick, thank you for the follow-up there. All right, so let's go into some of these financial gift ideas. starting off with a 529 college savings account. Tell us about it.
Yeah, we found that this gift is a favorite for grandparents to give to their grandchildren. You know, sometimes parents don't have enough money to be saving for college. Grandparents are the well-off old folks whose money has been able to double and double and double in investments. They've got pensions, and so they're set. But they want to pass something along to their grandchildren. And this is a great gift for grandparents to give every single year. Every single year they can make a contribution to the grandchild's 529 account. And it shows both a deep sacrificing love, because grandma and grandpa are often giving large amounts of money to the children's grandparents, as well as it supports the values of education. And they want their grandchildren to be thriving in life and to be able to handle themselves and to get a good education. So it really does show an amount of love, and it's an amount that that grandparents can do a little bit every year, even to help them save for it. So that's I think a wonderful gift. We have a lot of grandparents. In fact, almost 80 or 90 percent of the money that we have in 529 accounts is actually administered and contributed by the grandparents. And I just think that's a wonderful legacy, an education legacy to leave to your grandchildren.
David Marotta, you also reference quote-unquote fun investments. What are those?
Yeah, children need to understand three things. They need to understand how to make money, how to spend money, and how to save and invest. And the saving and investing piece, the markets are fickle. And so whenever you first look at the markets, the next 3 years often determine how you feel about the markets. And so if the markets go down for 3 years, you think the markets are a great place to lose money. And if the markets go up, you think the markets never go down. And so if you give investments to children at a very young age, you can actually help them learn over a decade as they're growing up exactly how investments move. And so a fun investment might be something as simply taking one of the companies that they really like, finding out, or the toy that they really like, finding out what company makes it, and then buying them shares in that company. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if they like the whole Marvel Universe, Disney is now owns the Marvel Universe, and Disney's a huge company for kids, or Mattel, or the Blizzard Entertainment, or something like that. You can buy shares in one of their company, and you can hold it in a gift to minors account for them, and they can watch the shares in that company go up and down. So those are the kinds of fun investments where they have a personal sort of connection with that. Or their favorite restaurant, or mm-hmm. something like that, where they have a personal connection with it, and therefore they know what the company is. And every time they go buy something from that company or go to that restaurant, they know that actually a piece of their profits is coming back to them in the share of dividends. And so they can see how the whole cycle works and understand it better over a long period of time.
977-1070 is the phone number. We have one segment left with David Marotta, the president of Marotta Wealth Management. 977-1070. We're talking about Christmas gifts and specifically financial Christmas gift ideas. We have more coming up here on The Shilling Show, News Radio 1070 and 98.9 FM WINA. Stay with us. Shilling Show continues here with David Marotta, MarottaOnMoney.com. We're talking about financial Christmas gift ideas. This is something I never heard of before. It's a Kiva gift card, and I just wasn't familiar with that organization. Tell us about that.
Yeah, Kiva is an organization that makes popular microloans in the third world. So someone in the third world wants to buy little baby chickens. Mm. They're going and the seed to feed them. And then later on they're going to sell those chickens for a profit, but they need to buy the chickens initially in order to be able to do that. And what they're really adding is their sweat equity, their labor, and that's where they're going to get real value. So Kiva does microloans across the entire world. They work with a lot of microloan companies in each country, but they provide a web interface for you to know exactly who you're giving the money to, what it's for, and when it gets paid back. And you don't get any interest for your money, but you get a lot of fun out of being able to support microloans around the world and really raise people out of poverty through their own entrepreneurship. And it's not an answer to all poverty, but it's an answer to a lot of poverty in the world is this microloans, because all they need is a little bit of capital. What they have is the willingness to work. So with a Kiva gift card, the way Kiva works is a bunch of people get together and they each give $25. And so you can give your loan in small increments as $25, and so you can give $25 here and $25 there. A Kiva gift card is just $25, so it's like a gift card. Only it can only you redeem it at Kiva with a loan, and then anytime they want, they could take the $25 out selfishly for themselves, and the Kiva will send them a check. But you can keep loaning it. So you loan your $25 out. The microloans are usually over a period of a year or two, and then you get your money back. Now you've got $25. Now you can loan it out again. And so if you give a Kiva gift card every year, someone can build up an account value that has maybe $250,000 or $250 in it. That's 10 Kiva gift cards over 10 years. Now they've got loans coming back every couple of months, and they're loaning the money out again because the payments will come back in like $3 increments. It's a way of giving to somebody who doesn't want more things cluttering them up. They're trying to be more socially responsible, and they want to have the fun of sort of having a world, helping the world at large in various countries. But it also helps develop gratitude because if you see the people who are in the third world who need these microloans, it makes you realize just how much we have here in America through the prosperity of our country, and it just helps develop a little bit less of a grumbling heart and a little bit more of a grateful heart. And so I love it. I'm always sending out Kiva loans. I have an account now that's built up a fair amount of money in it. And my wife is always you end up picking a niche. So my wife's niche is, she sends to women who want to buy sewing machines to do sewing work, because she knows that, and she knows that with a sewing machine and hard labor, you can get a lot of money by doing various pieces of clothing. I tend to give most of my loans in Costa Rica. I just think it's a very interesting country, and I got a chance when I was down there to see some of the banking system down there and realize how important the loans are to the people down there just to do their normal agricultural sort of season. My first Kiva loan was in the Ukraine, and it was a young man who was helping to support his parents. He was living with his parents. He drove a taxi cab. His taxi cab had broken. He had no way to make money until he got his taxi cab fixed, and he had no money to fix his taxi cab. And I realized a microloan was perfect for him because he got the loan, he fixed his cab, he made the money, and he paid the loan back. And it was absolutely what he needed to do. But traditional lending doesn't hit the poor very well. It's too expensive. And so Kiva just provides a little bit less expense on microloans around the world.
Let's talk about inspiring books.
Yeah, there's a whole set of books. Probably some of my favorite books are, if you know someone who's approaching retirement, so in the the 55 to 65 range, retirement is a big deal that you need to plan for. You need to know what you're going to be doing in retirement. And there's two books that I really like for that. One is called The New Retirementality. It's kind of a weird name that Mitch Anthony, the author, made up. But it talks about what you do in retirement. Because it used to be easy in retirement when you retired at 65 and you were dead at 72. You just had 7 years at the end of your life. Now you retire at 65 and the odds are that you're going to be alive at 95 are pretty good. And so you've got a 30-year second career. And so Mitch Anthony's The New Retirementality is one of the books I recommend. The second one is by Mark Friedman, and it's called Encore, meaning now you're going to have your second career. Encore, finding work that matters in the second half of life. And I think that's the right way to think of retirement, is that second half of life when you don't need to necessarily work for money, but you do need to figure out what you want to do with your life.
You know, it is interesting to think about books. And, I interview a fair amount of authors on the program, and I always like to have a book in my hands as opposed to somebody, an electronic reader or reading it on screen, which I really dislike a lot. But there's just something about receiving a book. It's full of potential. You know, and when you talk about inspiring books, I happen to like books where I can acquire a talent, or I'm learning more about how to do something, or learning more about something that's really important to me. I still think that's a great gift, and it never gets old.
It's probably one of the least expensive gifts that can change the entire course of someone's life in the most significant way possible is a book. Another good book for age group of, I'm going to put 20 to 40-year-olds, is a book called I Could Do Anything If I Only Knew What It Was. It's by Barbara Sher. I like all of her books, but I especially like this one. I read this book at 40 years old, and it changed my life. And I wished I'd read it, a few years earlier. And it's a kind of a book where you read the first three chapters, and then based upon how you've reacted to the first three chapters, you read one more chapter in the book. Mm. But that chapter is now tailored to your kind of personality. And I read one more chapter and it changed my life. And it's for people who maybe they kind of know what they want out of life. So sometimes a student fresh out of college isn't the right book for this. But it's a student who's maybe in their late 20s or early 30s, and they've had a little bit of work experience, enough to begin to know what they like and don't like, but they really don't know what it is that they want to do with their life. But they're young enough so that, or old enough, at any age you can make a course change of direction for your life. But I found that book especially interesting and helpful to help me understand myself better.
Our remaining minute, what thoughts do you want to leave for people at this Christmas season regarding gift giving?
Yeah, I'm going to give one more. Our earlier caller talked about how much people go into debt at Christmas time, and it's very sad. We try to save up necessities and buy necessities at Christmas time because they're things we would have bought in the budget anyway. Mm-hmm. So I actually put on my Christmas list this year socks. I know socks is the crazy gift that people think no one ever likes. I like socks, and I'm hoping to get socks. A gift for a family that is struggling with finances is a gift to Dave Ramsey's Financial Peace University. Mm. It costs $100. I often recommend that you give $50 because if people have $50 of skin in the game, they'll actually mm-hmm. attend. Dave Ramsey's Financial Peace University is the gift that struggling families should give themselves. Both husband and wife should go. It will change the course of your life. It will turn you from being in debt to growing millions.
David Morata, thank you so much for being with us today on The Shilling Show. Really a great program on financial Christmas gift ideas. You can get more information, Morata, on money.com. And David, Merry Christmas to you and your family.
Yeah, Merry Christmas. Thank you so much for having me.